Hello and welcome to Twisted Britain, a podcast on true crime in Britain with a sprinkling of the weird and the macabre. And your hosts are me, Bob Dale.
And me, Ali Downey.
And we are recording in the cellar, as we always do.
Yeah.
We're in the cellar again. This is recording two of this evening, so the two of us are literally slightly blue from sitting in the cellar in December.
Yeah, the boxes I'm sitting on have changed shape.
To your ass.
Yeah.
You've moulded them to your ass.
Yeah.
I actually went and got a stool.
I don't know what's in them, but whatever it is now ass-shaped.
Ass-shaped. Ali ass-shaped. So we just recorded an episode that you did that was gruesome.
Yeah, it was torturous.
Torturous, and we stand against torture. We've made that very clear in the last episode.
We did.
I'm going to take us on a slightly different tact just now for my case for you this evening. So basically, I wanted to try and find a case on kind of good old forgery.
Oh, I like forgery.
Yeah.
The victimless crime.
Well,
no, it's not.
No, not at all.
It's almost never the victimless crime.
No, there's very few victimless crimes, I would say.
Prostitution.
Well, no, the women could be seen as victims.
Okay.
Depending on how you view things and whether they choose to do it, shall we say.
I feel like I answered that too quickly.
Yeah.
And revealed something.
I think you might have said something more about yourself there than your views on things.
Damn.
So I was trying to find a case where someone had made some pretty sweet metal plates and printed off a shitload of cash. That's essentially what I was looking for. I didn't find that. But what I did find was a story of arrest and execution that I will tell you about in a minute. Forgery, however, forgery is not now and hasn't been for about 200 years a capital offence.
I was going to say executed for forgery.
So it was a very short period of time that in the 1700s, early 1800s, that forgery was a capital offence in England. It has never been a capital offence in Scotland, except in exceptional circumstances.
There were, I do know that around the 1700s and 1800s, there were a number of large, scandalous cases of war bond forgeries. So I wonder if the fact that it was a capital offence has anything to do with that.
Quite possibly. Where it stretches into capital offence in Scotland is where it involves the royal seal.
Oh.
So basically, when you're forging something that looks like it's got a royal stamp on it, or I suppose it's that kind of, we hark back to the HMS Dreadnought case. You know, that the only crime they got done for there was impersonation. Was that right?
Yeah.
So maybe this has got something to do with that as well. It's impersonating the royal seal.
Yeah.
In a forged manner.
Yeah, you would be. You'd be impersonating the Queen.
Yeah.
Technically, or the King at the time.
The King at the time. So the case I'd like to tell you about is that of a man by the name of Henry Fauntleroy. Not Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Great name.
Little Lord Fauntleroy was the curly-haired blonde child that we've all seen in pictures.
Yep.
This was a very different Fauntleroy. Henry was born in 1782... into a pretty good family. Like, he wanted for nothing. His father was a founding member of a bank by Marsh, Sybil and Co., which, according to the Bank of England records that I found, was actually fully named Marsh, Sybil, Stracey and Fauntleroy, or Devims, Cuthroy, March, Creed and Co.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. Originally, I read it as Marsh, Sybil, Stracey, Fauntleroy, Devimes, Cuthbert, Marsh, Creed and Co. But it seems to have been two different versions of the same name. The bank was founded in 1792, which is which we find Henry about 10 years old at this time. And his dad set up this bank with a few of his mates, by the looks of it.
Yeah.
And he joined the bank as a junior clerk and worked there with his father for about 7 years. Sadly, his dad passed away in 1807, at which time Henry becomes a senior partner in the firm.
Taking over from his father.
So yeah, I think at this point, rather than looking for somebody who was qualified for the role, they went, well, he's been a clerk in here for 7 years and it was his dad.
His father was a partner.
So we'll just give him the partnership.
Yeah.
Whether that's right or wrong... it does make ends to this because it's in the long run very, very wrong. But he was a trained man. He'd worked in the Bank of the Clerk. He understood the business. It was his dad's business. So, like, yeah. you can see why he would have been offered the senior.
Yeah, it wasn't a job he couldn't do.
It was a job above his station, I would say, at the time, but maybe not one that he could do. So at the age of 29, he becomes a senior partner in what was a reasonable-sized bank in London, which would have been a pretty good job. If it wasn't for the fact that the bank had a few issues that at this time were essentially going to lead to an outcome that is a rope with a knot on the end of it. Now, not only was capital punishment for forgery a relatively short period of time, it was a rather unfortunate period of time, or stupid, of Henry that he was A, alive, B, in England, C, in charge of a bank, and D, committing forgery when it was, in fact, during the time period that it was a
capital. The only time that he could possibly be killed for it, he does it.
Yeah, and he made those decisions himself. Well, the ones that matter, he made himself. Like, he didn't choose to be alive. He didn't choose to live in England. He didn't really choose to be in charge of a bank, but he accepted the role. But he did choose to commit forgery. As I say, the bank wasn't doing so well. Similar to what happened to the banks in kind of 2008, basically all their money was tied up in loans that they weren't in the best position to deal with.
Yep.
So we had all the subprime mortgages problems in the late 20 zeros. How do you say that? 20 zeros?
20 hundreds.
20 hundreds. 2008.
2000s.
The 2000s, yeah, was all the subprimes and people were lending against things that actually shouldn't have never been lent against. Well, this is basically kind of what was happening here. But instead of the bank lending against mortgages, they were lending to building firms.
Yep.
And the building firms had on these construction projects that were being undertaken without the right level of investment in them. So basically what they needed was a shite load more money thrown at them to complete the projects that would have been the only way to cash out the loans that they'd taken in the first place.
Yeah, it's like when the Bank of England bails out the government.
Yeah, it's similar to that. So basically, when this finishes its run, it'll be fine because everything will be worth enough money that we've finished, but we're literally just going to keep throwing money at it until it works. Basically, the debts are so locked up in the completion of the projects that if he'd called in the debt against the building projects themselves, the building projects would have collapsed, which would have taken the bank with them. So it's that kind of pretty shitty place to be. If the building projects don't get finished, the debt's never paid. But for them to get finished, you have to throw
more money at it.
Yeah.
You have to get into more debt.
So you're in that kind of period in the middle of a project where it's not quite worth the amount that's been lent, but when it's finished it will be.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I was trying to write this earlier and I was like, does this make sense in my head? So you've got half a structure, let's say. The building projects were maybe for housing or whatever. You've not built enough to pay off the loan. So you need to throw good money at bad money, essentially.
Yeah.
Or good money at a hole. I mean, basically, it's just shit budgeting from the start. So somebody should have said, this is going to cost £20,000, and they borrowed £10,000 in the hope that they would be able to remortgage against it, I suppose.
Yeah, makes sense. It's not great financial.
No, doesn't make sense in the slightest.
Yeah.
And the big problem with this shit budgeting is that the bank doesn't really have any more money to give. Well, not their own money, anyway. The normal place for a bank to go for extra cash and for extra credit, as you said, is usually the Bank of England. They've bailed out the government a few times.
Yep.
In recent months, they've done it.
And they bailed out banks.
Oh, yeah. Many, many in the past.
Yep.
But Marsh, Sybil & Co., as I'm going to go with, because it's the smaller of the names.
Yep. Less of a mouthful.
They're not at this point, shall we say, very A-rated. They've not got a great credit rating with the Bank of England.
They're a B bank.
I wouldn't even go as far as to say they were a B bank. They might have been a C or a D bank at this point.
A dank.
A Dadank. I don't know why double D, but they are Dadank. So the Bank of England are not going to give them any more money to lend out or give them the credit status to be able to lend more money. And that's a really bad place for a bank to be.
Yeah. You're not really a bank if you don't have any money.
No, but that's the interesting thing. So we've got this bank at this stage that has lent against projects that are not finished. They can't get more money, but they have to do something before that information gets to the high street. If it gets to the people who have their own personal money invested in the bank and they find out about the financial situation that the bank is in, they're likely to do the sensible thing.
Pull out.
Start taking your money out.
Yeah.
Now, that in itself is another thing that's going to spiral the bank into bankruptcy. Like, a bank in bankruptcy is a really scary thing. But this is, they've got two arms. If they find out, if people find out how bad it is, they're going to pull the money out. If we can't lend to the building contractors, we're going to fail on those debts and the bank's going to fail. So they've got two arms of failing.
Yep.
And that kind of perpetuates the problem that they're in, that they have no out. Well,
that's, other than throwing money at it.
Well, yes, but they don't have money to throw at it. Or certainly, like I say, not their own. And the big problem with that is none of this is a crime so far, really. It's not unheard of that banks are crooked.
No.
It's not unheard of that they use people's money to move around and they can't pay out everything that people hold in their accounts because they have been invested in stocks and shares and things like that. But
Wall Street is notoriously corrupt.
It's not even just Wall Street, man. I think it's just like banking is... I mean, corrupt's an interesting word. Would I say it's corrupt or would I just say that that's the way it happens? I don't know, but that is the way it happens.
Yeah.
Or certainly happened in the 1700s.
It still happens today.
Yes, indeed. This is a fine line, however, that I find that they're walking that I would imagine happens more often than we know about. But this fine line of going, we can't let people find out the credit rating we have. We can't lend money there, and we can't do this, and we can't do that, is a really fine line just to stay open. So rather than admitting any problems with the finances of the bank, Henry Fauntleroy decides that it would be a much better plan to just forge his way out of it. So how do you do that?
Printing press.
Would be one way of doing it. Yeah, yeah. He doesn't have one of them.
No.
He needs money to pay for loans and float the bank. And he also needs money because Henry leads quite a sweet-ass life. Henry's got two houses to run, one in London and one outside of London. He's got mistresses to keep, obviously.
Obviously.
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
And he's got a wine cellar that was in awe by all of the other rich knobs of the time. The man liked women, wine, and houses, and he had a few of each. He also had this bank that was walking a very fine line to bankruptcy.
The razor's edge of collapse.
So how do you keep cash flowing? So how do you keep cash flowing in a bank where there's no cash to flow?
Slavery.
One way. Or you forge the signatures of all the depositors in your bank and sell off their stock.
Wow.
Claiming it's your own to do so. And then you could also transfer all of the available funds that are in the bank out of the bank and use the accounts that weren't his to use to fund the lending.
That's going to come back and bite you in the ass.
So, you know, things are getting bad when actually you question that the banks are actually doing beyond what is reasonable.
Yeah.
They're doing things that basically banks shouldn't do and is actually to be, in my opinion, at the essence of banking. The essence of banking to me is my money is safe with you. Otherwise, why would I give it to you? It's safe to you and I make a return, I suppose, is the thing. But you also know that the money that you've got in savings is being used in investiture to justify the savings, that the investment that you get back.
Maybe not justify. My investments made £1 last year.
But they weren't lent out and you did make a pound.
Kid you not, a pound.
Yeah.
And there were six A4 pages of figures to tell me that I'd made a pound.
Well, I hope you have that pound framed in the house.
I don't.
The guy, you can't even lift it out the bank.
No, I can't. Thank you, Isa.
So Henry's basically just juggling everything that is available fingertips around within the bank. I need to lend money here. I've got some money here. I'll sell that bit and I'll not tell anybody and I'll sign signatures here and I'll lend it there and I'll get it back eventually. And while that seems... Now, well, that is a crime. It's not doing any harm to anybody until somebody wants their money. The weird thing I find here is Henry Fauntleroy kept a journal of what he was doing.
Love that name.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah. Would you like to hear the evidence of forgery in his own words?
Yeah.
In order to keep up the credit of our house, I have forged powers of attorney for the above sums and parties and sold out to the amount here stated. And without the knowledge of my partners, I kept up the payments of the dividends and made no entries of such of payments into our books.
Now, is he writing that after the fact, or is he writing that contemporaneously?
As far as I can tell, he was keeping a journal of what he was doing.
That's amazing.
It's mad, isn't it?
That is wild.
Never have I come across somebody that has written down their crimes.
As they committed them.
That's a silver bullet, really, isn't it? Anybody finding that goes, you knew what you were doing. Whether it was after the fact or not, I suppose it doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't.
Because he still knew what he was doing.
Yeah. If it's contemporary, it's just even more crazy, though.
Yeah.
Today I committed these crimes.
Today I did this. It was bad.
Dear diary.
As long as it's not the red shoes, we're fine. It is like I say, it's not often that somebody keeps records of the crimes they committed, but Henry did. As you can imagine, the scheme was never going to work forever. This is going to fail.
You're going to run out of money to move around.
He did exactly that. He ran out of stocks to sell and funds to juggle. And I guess he probably thought he could just keep going until those building projects were done and he'd be able to recoup the debt and things would just be okay.
Yes, yeah. Once that eye's completed, everyone's going to want to ride it.
Yeah, or he just didn't give a fuck. And he didn't really care about what he was doing. And he just enjoyed having two houses, some mistresses and a shitload of wine.
I'd quite like to have two houses, some mistresses and a shitload of wine.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have access to forging anything, though.
No. Or properties, women or wine.
You can get wine at the bar, man.
Oh, sweet. Prosecco.
Oh, no, I don't like the bubbles.
The finest of wine.
Doesn't sit with me well at all, the bubbles. Henry was caught, obviously, or we wouldn't be talking about him. He was caught when he tried to sell off £10,000 in stocks that were owned by a man called Francis William Bellis. And the signature on the sale was proven to be fraudulent. In October of 1824, at which point he had embezzled £250,000 in 1820s money, which is $22 million.
Wow.
Today.
You love inflation numbers.
I do love inflation numbers. I like it because it makes sense in my mind. You have to win the lottery 3 times to embezzle what he did.
Nice.
That just makes it mad money. Like, it's completely inconceivable to me. $1 million is inconceivable to me, but 22 million is really
22 times more inconceivable than one.
In fact, it's probably 1,000 times more inconceivable.
Might as well be.
It might as well be. So he basically got caught when he went too big, I guess is what's happened here. And somebody caught him and went, that's not my signature. Or somebody said, that's not the right signature on that. And you don't have power of attorney on this.
For that £10,000.
For £10,000. Which I suppose if you divided it by 25, about £1 million, roughly. You know, just sign a wee thing here, Mickey Mouse.
We did used to have £1 million checks.
Yeah, we did. I've still got one.
We all wrote £1 million check to each other back when checks was a thing in the 90s.
I've genuinely still got one.
You still got yours?
Yeah, I've still got it. You can very I think mine was written in yellow Crayola pen.
Nice. Is it Gaudi that did yours?
Yeah, I've nice. Still got it.
Rate that.
Which at the time seemed ridiculous, but he might be the only one that makes it.
That's true. Oh my God. That is what I would never have picked that in school, would you? That Gaudi would be the most likely of us to make a million.
Well, here we are.
Well,
none of this is making it, but just I worked out roughly what I've made in my lifetime since leaving school and not going to uni and getting a job. Now, if you flat say I left school at 18 and I made 25 grand a year, roughly, I've worked for 22 years, so I've made just over half a million pounds. Where the fuck is that money?
I don't know. I've not made half a million pounds.
I bought a house.
I bought weed. I
bought a house, a couple of cars, and I've got two children.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Yeah. Anyway.
They're an investment, though. They're going to pay you back later.
No, they're not. So it not be a massive shock to you to find out that Henry Fauntleroy was taken to trial. He was arrested in October of 1824. And as I say, at that point, he'd embezzled essentially £22 million. He entered a plea of not guilty.
Nice.
And testified at his own trial.
Never a good idea.
Would you like to hear some words of his testimony?
I would.
Further advances... Sorry. He testified that basically, further advances to those persons to secure the sums in which they stood indebted. So he was basically arguing, as we said earlier, that he needs to fill this hole with money that he'd created by funding the building projects in the first place with not enough money. So I need to fill that hole. But don't worry. Nobody panic. When this is all finished, we'll have a shit ton of cash. And I do like wine.
I believe him.
I believe he likes...
I don't know why, but I do.
Yeah, you shouldn't. He was an asshole. He was a man...
I bet he likes wine, though.
Totally in it for himself, totally in it for the wine and the mistresses and the houses. The jury, they didn't buy any of it.
No. I'm not surprised.
Would you like to guess how many minutes it took them to find him guilty?
Oh, 14.
Oh, not far off, 20.
Ah, how long was the trial? Was it less than 11 hours?
Well, do you know, I was thinking this earlier when you were talking about it. It might have been.
Amazing.
It literally only took 20 minutes for them to find him guilty. And I reckon, you know, what's that, 4 minutes of leaving the courtroom, going into the room, everybody sits down, pours a cup of tea and went, he did it.
I love it. That's our two shortest trials ever in one night.
So he is found guilty and on goes the black cap and he is sentenced to hang. A couple of appeals are made. Basically, the appeals were made on legal stance, not against his guilty verdict. It was more that the way that it had been done was wrong. But he was eventually told your appeals mean nothing.
Yeah.
And he was found guilty of forgery. So the appeals were thrown aside and he was publicly hanged in Newgate Prison on the 30th of November in 1824. And he was the last man hanged in Britain for forgery. And the capital sentence stood for another 8 years after his hanging. Nobody was found guilty of it. Now, I tried to have a look at how many people had actually been tried and sentenced to death for forgery. Now, it was revoked in 1832, and some of the stats I could find were from the 1810s, 1820s. And of, I think it was the 1810 to 1820 lot that I found, there was like 94 people taken to court for forgery. Seven of them were tried, were hanged.
Mm.
So it was a very low rate of people that were taken to court that were found guilty and hanged. In the preceding years, in the 20s and up to 24, when Henry was hanged, only a spattering, like two or three people were actually hanged. So it wasn't a huge amount of people that were found guilty of capital punishment.
Interesting.
Or were given capital punishment, sorry, should I say. So I think it's probably because of the wideness of what forgery could be.
Yeah, we think, or we hear forgery, and we automatically think of forging banknotes, but forgery encompasses a massive range of crimes.
Yeah, like making fake sweets and putting it off as a name.
Yep. forging documents for antiques.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's probably the biggest.
Yeah, probably like to pass off into pawn shops and things like that. Yeah. Well, we talked about the 40 elephants. I would imagine a lot of their paperwork was very much made up.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, after 1832, there was an act passed in Parliament that basically said forgery would never be a capital punishment again. Would you like a couple of reports from the time about the crowd that gathered to watch him hang?
I would. I love a crowd that... This was like public entertainment back then.
Absolutely.
There's no TV.
No, and there was a huge amount of like public interest in this case because this man had essentially been taking... You said, you jokingly said victimless crime at the beginning here, but the victims were the people who had invested all of their money into the bank.
Oh, yeah.
Or saved all their money in the bank. Maybe not invested is the right word, but... the Telegraph reports of the time that such a scandal was the Fauntleroy affair that over 100,000 people turned up to watch the hanging, with the Newgate Calendar having an account also. The Newgate Calendar account reads, "Every window and roof which could command a view of the dreadful ceremony was occupied, and places which it was impossible to catch a glimpse of the scaffold were blocked up by those who were prevented by a dense crowd before them from advancing further." So it was literally like everybody wanted to see it. I liked this one account from a penny sheet. Penny sheet being a local...
Yep.
I was going to say a local rag, but no, just like a local news information leaflet.
Yeah, a news sheet.
A single news sheet.
Yeah.
The Pitts Printers penny rag. "With the dreadful preparations completed, the usual signal was given and the world closed for him forever."
Wow.
Good words.
Yeah.
For a penny sheet, I like that a lot. So Henry Fauntleroy was found guilty. It was the last man to be found guilty of forgery and to be hanged for it. Other people have obviously been found guilty of forgery, but he was the last man in Britain to be hanged for it. A wee tidbit to go with this. Coins were stamped afterwards, which I find quite ironic, even being a banker.
Nice.
And were found in circulation. They were stamped with "Fauntleroy, the robber of widows and orphans, executed at Newgate. Such be the fate of the insolvent bilking bankers and agents." And that is a picture of one of the coins that I will post online.
Wow.
Very cool.
Hanged. Nice. V-cool.
One of those coins sold in auction in 2011 for £472. So they're obviously a collector's item. And I know that's a bit of a scant tale for a normal episode for me, but I just started reading about Henry Fauntleroy and I was like, this guy had pretty much everything.
We could forge one of the commemorative coins.
We certainly can't buy one.
In... Well, it's not really commemoration.
We won't get one of those coins made. I did toy with the idea of getting a coin made for Heads or Tails Who Goes First, but we don't do that anymore. But it would have been forger or non-forger would have been the flip of the coin. Yeah, as I say, like I found that story when I was looking for a couple of sweet forgery cases to kind of tell you about. And there was other ones I came across that we'll maybe tell in a lump sum of two or three in an episode, or maybe we could do a couple each.
We'll do a couple each one day.
But
a couple of 10 minutes.
But just reading his case, I was like, this is a man who came from good stock and was almost too used to the livelihood that he was living that couldn't let go of money.
Yeah.
And whether it was his only way out or just the easiest way out that he saw, I suppose we'll never know. But he certainly made a decision to go. Well, he made a decision because he wrote it down.
Yeah. He documented it.
He knew what he was doing.
He kept concise bank records of his forgeries.
Which is mad. And as I say, when I was reading it, I was like, I think this is one, whether it is a long episode or a bonus episode or goes out on a Patreon or whatever, I just thought you would enjoy the story of Henry Fauntleroy.
I did. That's a great story.
But not the forgery plates I was looking for, so we will come back to it another time. It baffles me that banking can still be construed as... in that manner now,
yeah,
nearly 200 years later. And literally the 2008 banking crisis was not far off what he was doing. Somebody may correct me. I don't fully understand subprimes, but basically they were selling debts on debts and he was doing the same sort of thing 200 years beforehand. Yeah. Nobody hanged in 2008, might I add.
Maybe they should have.
Maybe they should have. Iceland put them all to prison.
I don't know why, but I thought you were going to say death.
No, Iceland put all their bankers to jail.
Iceland put them all to death. There's no bankers in Iceland now.
There's very expensive beer, but no bankers.
Yeah.
But no, they were the only country that actually put everybody to jail. I think one guy in America got it. But Henry paid the ultimate price for his abominable sins.
Poor Henry.
Really?
No. Well, poor Henry for hanging for it, yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
For £22 million?
Yeah.
You think his life should have been saved for that?
I don't think any amount of money is worth the life of a human being.
Right, so I don't disagree with you there, but I think the imposition he would have put on people's lives.
Oh yeah, he could have destroyed people's lives, but I still don't think people deserve to die.
I'm not an advocate
of capital punishment.
I'm not an advocate of capital punishment, but I don't disagree with this one given the time frame and the expanse of his crime. I never thought we'd come to the end of an episode with a solid disagreement between the two of us. We usually tend to agree on these.
We do.
So we will leave it at that this evening. That Ali and I disagree. I think Henry was justifiably hanged. And you do not.
I don't, no. I don't think he deserved to hang. Not for money. Money's just money.
It's always about money. We've talked about this a million times.
You follow the money.
It's always about money.
From Bob's point of view, I have lowered, in his view, fry about a foot. But actually, the box I'm sitting on is now inside me.
You have gone down quite a bit.
Yeah.
The microphone's right in front of your face now.
I've been lowering it as I go down.
Thanks very much for listening to this. This was very much an indulgence for me because I started reading the story and I went, I want to read some more. So while I read it, I'll write it down.
That's our lives.
Yeah, pretty much, man. A couple of websites that I used were excellent, and I will link them in some posts on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and we'll put them in the show notes. Thank you always to anybody that does research into these crimes that we read on their websites. It's invaluable information for us. I hope you've enjoyed that. If you didn't, we'll be back next week with a different one.
Yep.
And you can listen to that instead.
It'll be new and different and exciting.
So thank you from me.
And thank you from me. Thank you, love you, bye.
Thank you, love you, bye.
The dark blue button, Bob.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, love you, bye. I can hear myself.